Welcome back, everyone. We are Little Brown Women, and this is our podcast, Unplugged. Every fortnight, we talk candidly with our wondrous guests and with each other about a range of important and topical issues, often from the lens of identity, culture, and empowerment. Today, we welcome the lovely Elise Gill onto the show. Elise is a beauty and fashion content creator, and by day, a creative producer in the film industry. She is known for her in-depth skin and beauty insights and is a key influencer for personal care. In today's episode, we explore Elise's life and career journey, her reflections on the interplay between her career and identity, and what role self-care plays in her life and how it has shaped who she is today. So without further ado, let's get talking.
Welcome, Elise. We are so happy to have you on the show today. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very, very happy to be here. Thank you so much. It's a dream come true, honestly. I'm so happy.
It's a dream come true for us. Thank you. Thank you so much. You're so interesting as a person and what you do. You know, I think we've all had the same feeling in the sense that the content you produce is so genuine. Often where you get really genuine content producers, you always think, what was sort of the story behind, you know, where they got to and how they got to there. So I guess my first question to you would be, what are some of the things in your childhood that led you to becoming a beauty and fashion content creator?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it was very much my mum. She would always talk to me about being very afraid when she was younger. She was the only one out of her sisters that had acne. And it was quite, you know, it was quite new back then. It was around the 60s, 70s. I say new in the sense that no one really spoke about it. People would cover it up with makeup. And she was, you know, as I was getting older, I was turning 11, and she saw the first signs of acne on my skin, and I had it all over my back and things like that. And she was like, right, we're going to try and take this on. And my mum is a very kind of like mission orientated person. She's like, right, well, I've got a job to do, I'm gonna do it. And it was her that was, you know, she got out all her, I don't know if you know this Indian dermatologist called Bharti Vyas.
Yes.
Yeah, so she, yes. She had her book at home. We're of Mauritian origin, but my mum was always fascinated by Indian women because there was this, you know, natural remedies, healing, self-care. It wasn't so much like, she wasn't really into the whole Americanized woman that would wear makeup and things. So she got out this book and she was like, we're gonna tackle this together. So I never felt like alone. And I guess she was the one that got me on this skincare journey. And through her, I learned so much. We did a lot of homemade remedy masks with turmeric and oats and milk. And, wow. And we also didn't have a lot of money. So my mum, when she gave birth to my brother, decided to not work for a bit because it was a lot having my brother and me. And so my dad was just working. Which was great in the sense that we always had our mum around, but it was hard in terms of money, and we made it work. And the one thing they always said to us is, we never want you guys to feel like you don't have enough or you don't have what you need. So we were very kind of, my mum was very like, if you want something, that's something different to you needing something. So anyway, when it came to skincare, she was like, let's try what we have at home. So it was very much like turmeric, like I said, yogurt, oats, all of that. And that's basically kind of what got me into it. And at the time I was very aware that I didn't look like my peers. And so, you know, there were both my schools, my primary school and my secondary schools, were very diverse. There was all ethnicities there, but I just felt like I was a bit different. I was very skinny. I had really not bad teeth, but I had like a proper, like I had a gap in the middle of my teeth, they would stick out. I had very curly hair that was very hard to control, and then I had spots, so it was kind of like everything. And I felt very, very self-conscious, and my mum and my dad were very much like, no, you know, kind of, let's see what we can do. Like, we can get you braces, or we can do this, but doing everything on this kind of tight budget. So it made me really appreciate the things I had at home. So I got very heavily influenced by, you know, reading books that my mum had on skincare from years ago, trying things out at home, changing my diet, like looking at what I was eating. And then it got quite bad. So I had to go to the doctors for it. And I was so excited because I thought, oh, you know, a doctor, that's so big. Like, I'm having to go to a doctor for my skin. I was like 12, 11. And I thought whatever they give me is going to work because, you know, it's from a doctor. And they gave me something called Panoxyl. And it was like this clear gel that I put on my skin. And I put it on and we were so excited. And then I had a really bad reaction to it. And I actually like broke out in almost like months.
Oh,
and it
was
so bad because it was my birthday as well. And it was all my family were coming round. You know, like back in the day, we used to do a lot of family parties. And I was meant to be performing in the living room with my, with my brother. And I'd had this breakout and it was just awful. And I got really down. I started to feel like, who can I trust? Who's going to actually give me advice? If a doctor can't advise me and they're giving me stuff that clearly is way too strong for my skin, that product's actually been removed from the shelves because it's so bad. But I just got really, really down about it. And in turn, that affected my skin because, you know, one thing I always knew is when you are stressed or when something's going on inside, you can't hide it on your skin. It will come out in some shape or form, whether that's through acne or eczema or psoriasis or something, you know?
Yeah.
And my feelings inside were really coming out. So I started to look into my own ingredients. I started researching ingredients that could work for my skin type, like salicylic acid. And that was like a common one at the time. And then I started reading the backs of bottles, and then I'd go to like Superdrug, and there was I think it was called Savers. It was like a...
Oh, I love Savers, Elise.
Yeah, it was so cool. I lived in Croydon and my dad would go to Croydon Market, Surrey Street.
The one in Surrey Street?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm familiar with that one. That's the one I used to go to.
Yes.
Finally, someone who knows that Croydon.
Like, so I'd go to the Specsavers on the corner, get my eyes tested because I wore glasses as well. That was another thing. And then my dad, while I was doing my bits over there, he'd go into Savers and pick up like tea tree oil and all these little bits that he could find that were on offer. And then I just try it out. And I got really excited. It was a real journey and a real process. Of course, I'd get let down every time something didn't work, but I kind of managed to find a way to pick myself up a bit. Just through hope, I guess. So that's kind of how I got into the skincare, into this journey, basically.
Yeah, that's, you know what, that's so inspiring. And, you know, like, as I've mentioned to you before, I've been in a similar situation where I've probably struggled with acne since the age of 19, and I'm now 28. So it's been like a decade long journey. And so I can really relate to you. And I think often people think that people like us, people who have suffered with it, it's more of a, you know, how do I look? But I think it goes so much deeper than that. And I think you've really touched on that. I think it's a really sort of health related journey too, because, you know, just as you said, a lot of things can affect it. And acne is, like so many other things, just a manifestation of perhaps other things that are going on internally or in our minds, you know, a lot to do with mental health. So I guess we're really fortunate that you have been so honest in just explaining and describing to us what your experience was like, but also being honest in the sense of saying, you know, probably other things as well. Something personal is always the greatest driver to achieving something. And that's definitely what you've done. You know, I think when you have an actual connection to the thing that you're driving, it's so different because it becomes a passion as opposed to something that you have to do. So, I mean, we all avidly watch, you know, especially your Instagram content. It's brilliant because it's so informative. It's really informative. And now I think, you know, our audience and especially, and us as well, we understand why it's so informative, because you've spent so many years with your mum researching and actually doing the groundwork to understand what skin is and how to heal your skin. And that's that's really important. I love the holistic approach that you guys had. I don't really believe in sort of Western medicine. I don't think that's what helps, because it kind of just covers it up, or it makes it worse instead of like getting to the source and healing it. So I guess fast forwarding a few years, how did your journey then impact your later achievements of getting into the fashion industry?
You know, a lot of people in the fashion industry, their answers will always be around, you know, growing up, my mum had loads of Vogue magazines and I'd always flick through them. That was not me. I actually wanted to be a performer of some sort. And when I was in primary school, I signed up to dance classes in school, and I actually performed jazz and I think it was called step or something like that at, again, in Croydon, called Fairfield Halls. And it's like
love Fairfield Halls.
the auditorium is probably what Croydon is, well, not probably, but it's what Croydon is very well known for. It's like the auditorium. They do pantos there, they do shows there, and I did two dance shows there, and there's something about performing that I absolutely loved. I hated performing in front of a small group, but I loved a massive audience because I didn't have to look at anyone. I could just do whatever I wanted, and I felt really free. But there was something about it that scared me, and it was kind of like this unknowing. And I'm a Virgo. I'm very much a planner. I'm very kind of like, I need to know where I'm going. There is an element, you know, I love being surprised throughout, like if I'm going on a, you know, like a random date with Deep or something, I like like that. But I was scared about performing because I knew like all these pop stars almost had this like touring life, and I was so tied to my family that I was like, I can't get like that. I don't want to get to that level. So as part of performing, there was also this side of getting dressed that I really, really enjoyed. And I wasn't allowed to wear makeup growing up. I didn't actually start wearing makeup until I was about 20. And my mum, for these dance rehearsals and whatever we did, all the girls would be wearing like eyelashes and makeup. And my mum would just pull out her lipstick, put a bit on my lips, and take whatever was left on her fingers and put some on my cheek. And then she'd dress me up. And that whole process of dressing up, I really liked it. And then I started to think about, you know, behind the scenes of performances, and I started looking more at catwalks and production of catwalks, and I guess that's kind of what got me into it. And when we were younger, I used to watch a channel called Fashion TV, and it was just this really like random panel, but it would show every single catwalk of the season.
Yeah,
I just got really into it. I really loved the clothing. I was so inspired by the fact that everything was trend driven and kind of almost from the future, and bringing it back to reality and showing us how you can wear it in today's day and age. So I kind of went with that and really enjoyed, kind of when I got to 13-14, I started to find my style a bit more. I say I'm still finding my style, I feel, but I started to have a bit more freedom with what I could wear. And so for family parties, I would properly plan my outfits and like think about the shoes, the socks, the hairstyle, everything. And I really loved that idea of putting a look together. And so when I was in high school, the only kind of class that I loved was art. And my art teacher was called Mr. Pimlott at the time. He was a very, very, very old and wise man. And he said to me, you know, the way you put yourself together and the way that you draw reminds me of a fashion student. And I ran with that. And he said, he said, I want you to take your sketchbooks and do what you want. Stop drawing bowls of fruit if that's not what you're into. And stop drawing, you know, figures of humans and people around us. Draw dresses. Draw what makes you, what excites you. And I thought, oh, my gosh, okay. And then I started really taking this seriously and going fabric shopping and getting samples. And he really kind of paved that way for me. And then I ended up going to Croydon College, and I was in the higher education department, and I studied fashion design, and that covered everything from pattern cutting to styling to photographing, and I touched on all the different areas. And it was then that I realized, you know, making clothes is not for me. Like I loved designing it, but I had a very I didn't think in the same way that some of our designers do today, where it was, my designs were very, I guess, out there, and they weren't necessarily clothes that you could wear on the street. And so that meant that the pattern cutting side of things was very difficult. I found it quite hard. So I kind of fell into promotion, like fashion promotion. And just kind of before that also, my drive for it was very, very strong, because my dad had been diagnosed with cancer when I was, I think I was 14. It was in 2005. And I had this switch, and I was like, I need to do what makes him happy, like what makes him proud. Kind of, he needs to see that life was worth living by seeing me graduate or do really well in school and things like that. And so I really went for it. So I got a distinction at Croydon College, and then I went to University for the Creative Arts in Epsom. And I did lots of different things, but I fell into fashion film, and that was where my like real passion was.
Wow.
There was something about film, and I think it comes from growing up again and performing in music videos. I absolutely loved music videos. I'd switch between MTV, MTV Bass, and the other music channels on the TV, and I'd switch between them all day. And I'd watch all the content and think, wow, look how cool that shot. Or, you know, I didn't know what visual effects was at the time, and me and my brother would call it computer work. We'd be like, wow, that's that person, that Aaliyah video, that's computer work, that's great. And I had this real appreciation for film and watching how film developed and how someone's personality could come through film. So yeah, I just kind of fell into fashion film, and I tried all different type of like aspects of it. So I worked throughout uni. I worked part-time, and I did lots and lots and lots of internships. There was never a summer where I didn't work. And so I tried my hand at being a camera woman. So I was shooting for smaller PR agencies. I remember I did this project for Puma, and I had to go all the way to Southall with my massive camera bag. And I had no clue, and everyone around me was mostly male, you know, and so it was quite hard navigating my way through it, but I pushed through. And then I fell into editing, so I became an editor at Spring Studios, and now I'm a producer, and production is kind of where I feel my skills lie, you know. I'm good at planning. I love seeing things come together. And I remember my manager at New Look, I worked at New Look as the global video producer, and I really wanted to be an art director at one point. I said, I want to make films, and I want to be the art director. And she said, yeah, but don't put a downer on being a producer. The producer is the one that makes everything happen. And that really stuck with me. So I kind of just ran with that, and I've been in fashion that whole time. And but whenever I was on set, I was always mostly with either the team, the crew, and being really stuck in it, or the makeup artist. So I was always learning tips from the makeup artist, always kind of looking at their kits and figuring out, you know, what would work on different skin tones and what would work on me, and why they were using certain products and things like that. So there was always this link between skincare and makeup. And some of the makeup artists I work with, actually, one of them was called Nayoko Skintu. She's a massive inspiration of mine, and she's done so well. And she used to always give her models a facial massage on set so that the makeup could sit really nicely on the skin. So basically the two worked hand in hand, and I then kind of fell into Instagram after that.
Right, it sounds a lot like universal alignment, Elise. That is, wow, honestly, I mean, just your whole story is so, it really is inspirational. And I think, you know, you're a true creative. You really are. You're a true creative. And it's so nice to hear the unfolding of your story and all of the sort of personal elements to it. Because I think anyone can be successful. That's so true. But it's just, it's so special when you hear the story behind it and how it led that person to get where they are. And for me, I mean, if I had to describe you, it would just be authentic, because you've genuinely done something which makes you happy. And I know that you touched on your father as well, and that's lovely, because if I know parents, and I hope this is true for most parents, what makes them happy is to see their child doing what makes their child happy. And clearly this is something that makes you happy. So I don't even know how much you fell into it. I think you've actually put in the mind work and the actual work to get where you are. So I applaud you. I think it's amazing. And it's so nice to be able to see a woman of color, you know, be open about her challenges and her obstacles and actually then reshape it and say, well, I've been through all of this and I'm going to use my personal experiences to shape the career and the life I want. And I think that's so powerful.
Thanks.
Really, really and truly. But oh God, I think we've all loved hearing about how you've got to where you are. And I mean, this isn't the end. This is just really, you know, continuation of your story. So I wonder what we're going to see from you next, Elise. I'm so excited.
To be honest, I think as well, like just throughout that as well, I forgot to touch on the fact that my skincare, well, I was still going with my skincare journey, you know, throughout uni, throughout school and throughout work. And it was at that point when, you know, when you start making a bit of money and you're like, oh, now I can go into Superdrug and look for my own skincare and things like that. So it was just this, I was having fun. It was a lot of hard work. I loved uni. I worked really, really hard and I didn't do any of the partying stuff. And it was really rewarding to be working at the same time and then to be able to still be on this skincare journey. So I had quite a few things kind of happening in parallel. As I kind of got into New Look and started to travel, I did a lot of traveling with New Look, and then I found my husband Deep. So then things just picked up again and it was really nice. And although you say it doesn't sound like things kind of fell, you're completely right. I did work towards all of these goals. But I am a very big believer in manifestation as well. My dad, after he was diagnosed back then, I remember him showing me notebooks of things saying, by 2010, I will have 2 properties, or by, and he'd write these mantras. And I didn't really know what it, I didn't understand manifestation. At the time. It wasn't a buzzy word. And he just did that. And I think that also helped me. I would think like that. I would write notes like that to really help me work towards those goals. So I just thought that was worth mentioning, because I know it's such a buzzword now, but it's actually something that was, that I grew up with. It was ingrained in me from how my dad would want to move forward.
Oh, that's so special, Elise. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think it's something that us three have spoken about a lot. And actually in our episode that we release at the beginning of December, it's something that we've all touched on. And I think this year it's been even more prevalent. And I'm sure that you'd agree with that. You're not only inspirational, but it's so much more than that to younger people, especially younger girls and especially younger women of color. It's so amazing to see your journey and actually your mindset. That's what it is. It's not your circumstance, it's your mindset.
Yeah.
Because you don't actually have to accept the reality that you're in if you're constantly manifesting the reality that you want. So, wow, this has been so powerful. Thank you so much, Elise.
Wow. That first segment, right? I think it's just wonderful how you've turned your struggles and your pains, and you've just literally flourished into such a successful female, such a successful woman of color in this industry. Like, it's just, like, thank you so much for just being authentic, for being honest. You're not afraid to be yourself. And and you've just reminded me that I need to make sure that whatever work I do is actually aligning with my core interests and my beliefs, you know? That it was obviously very traumatic when you were getting that medication prescribed by the doctor, and you had so much faith in the doctor, especially at that young age. You're like, right, I'm going to go to the doctors and I'm going to get this. It's going to solve my skincare issues.
Yeah.
And then obviously from that, you develop that lack of trust, but you've just gone out there, you've started researching off your own back, your family have been so supportive, and look at where you are now today.
Thank you.
And I just want to celebrate you, you know. Well done, seriously.
Thank you.
That just nicely leads me on to the next segment. And what I wanted to do, right, I wanted to discuss your reflections and your learnings that you've brought up from your own identity journey as a woman of color. And
how this has played a part in your professional career.
You know, I am this woman of colour, and it never really, within our household, it was very much celebrated, you know. If ever I was down or feeling down, my parents would flip it and say, your hair's not frizzy, it's just very curly, or you're not skinny, you're slim and you're elegant. Or I used to get really paranoid if I'd gotten a tan, and they'd say, oh, you have a really lovely golden colour, like you're not dark. And it was because I wasn't very open about, you know, what people would say to me at school back to my parents, because my parents, if they had found out someone had said something to me or spoken to me in a way, they would go straight to the headmistress or the headmaster. And it was almost like an embarrassment, you know, like your mum or your dad. And I know it was because they cared, but I just wanted to avoid that. So I held everything in. And they could see I was down, and I'd start telling them little things, and I'd say, like, no, you know, I feel like this about myself. It's not people making me feel like this, because I was scared of them going to them, you know. And I just never believed them. I never believed what they said when they said, no, you're elegant, all of this. And because the people around me didn't look like that. You know, I had these like black girls that looked incredible, and they were like thriving, and they had great hair, and I loved how confident they were. And then there were these white girls, again, really confident, just doing their thing with their straight hair. And then I just was like in the middle, and there weren't a lot of girls that looked like me. And the girls that did look like me were, they just were not me. Like, they were content with being, you know, in the background. They were happy to not be included in things. And I was just like, I want to be involved, I want to join a football club, I want to dance, I want to do this and that. And it's, I guess it was that passion that made me stick out in a sense to peers, being like, well, why do you feel like you should be involved in this? You know, like, you don't look like us. There were some people that I felt accepted me, not fully, but they kind of just accepted that I was there and I looked the way I did. But I was so lost, and I just didn't have an identity for a while. And I don't think anyone in school was very confident. There were people that were so overconfident, and I was like, wow, you're so great. And looking back, I think they must have had some sort of a complex to almost be that confident, to be over the top like that. You know, it just felt, looking back now, it doesn't feel real. And I was continuing to do what I thought would be accepted, like trying to iron my hair. Like, I'd get my mum to iron the hair so that I looked like these white girls at school. And they were the ones that weren't bullied. They were the ones that like had these boyfriends. They had loads of friends around them. And I didn't have that. And I remember it being like the 6 week summer holidays, and I would like hide. I wouldn't go out with friends or with people that I thought were friends. I felt free, because I didn't feel like, oh, it's summer holidays and I've got to shave my legs because I'm going to see people, you know. I was fine, because I was like, I'm with my mum and dad, who cares? Like, they don't care about me. I wasn't having to be in PE with all these people that looked great, like girls that were obviously developing features that I wasn't at the time and stuff. I just didn't ever feel like good enough. And so I started to fall into this version of me that wasn't me. And it was so uncomfortable. Like, I was in high school, and I was hanging out with a crowd that weren't a bad crowd, but they accepted me. But with that came things that I wasn't used to as a child or growing up. And, you know, these girls that I was friends with, they were very much like, they had boyfriends, they were allowed to stay at each other's houses. It was a big deal for me going to sleepover. Like, I wasn't really allowed to do that. And I tried to be this cool girl and like hang out with people. And, you know, I fell into this place where I was finally getting more attention, and boys were starting to look at me when previously they wouldn't, and girls were starting to welcome me into their groups. But it was so stressful. I absolutely hated it. Like, I had no chill. Like, I just could never, I was on edge. I was constantly on edge, because I was lying to my parents. I wasn't coming home when I was supposed to. I wasn't doing anything bad. I was just hanging out like after school and stuff. And I just wish like I'd been brave enough to say no. Like my brother had a very good group of friends and they were all, you know, raised similarly. And I was just like, I wish I had that. He can be himself. And he's younger than me. He's 3 years younger than me. But I always looked up to him, even though I took care of him. And I was like, I wish I had friends like that. And then it kind of got to a point, like I said, like my dad had gotten cancer and there was this urgency for me to do well. Like I had this sense of urgency inside myself. And I did rebel a little bit once he'd gotten the all clear, because I didn't really have to grow up. I had to grow up very quickly. I had to go with him to his chemotherapy and radiotherapy sessions. I'd go with my mum, and my brother was quite young, so we didn't really talk about it that much. But I really had to grow up. And then suddenly I rebelled because he got better. And I was like, I don't really know what to do with myself. Fell down this trap. And then I had to actually, I got this boyfriend, the one that treated me badly in the end. But it was the first time that I felt like someone really liked me. And then in, I think it was September, and it was 2007. I was like, right, I'm going to change. I'm only going to be friends with people that I want to be friends with. Having that, it's as bad as it may sound, because it didn't work out, having that boyfriend that was interested in me for who I was, I didn't have to hide. He had similar, he was Turkish, so he had similar background to me in the sense that his parents were quite strict and all of this. I felt empowered, and that made me feel like, you know what, I'm going to be myself. I can hang out with people that I want to hang out with. I'm going to go to you know, parties that I actually want to go to. And then that kind of trickled throughout my career, and I started doing things that only I wanted to do. And it's still now, like, all the, I do sponsored work here and there. I do ads. A lot of it is free work, because some of it I absolutely adore and I just want to do it. But I'm very authentic. I try to be very authentic. I dress the way I want to dress. I feel the way I want to feel. And I still, you know, still have moments where I feel quite low, and what people say can affect me sometimes. And that I was a very sensitive child, but it's just the way I am, and I accept that now. I don't beat myself up for it. And yeah, that's just the way I am now.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly relate with all of your experiences, and I think it's actually just made me think, you know, how similar I feel that we've gone through, like, in terms of being called a dark, skinny girl.
Yeah.
I was that girl.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
Secondary school, year 7 to year 9.
Yeah.
That why is it those 2 years in secondary school that is just always so hard on us? And
it's the worst. You just don't know who you are, and you're just listening to other people, and you're so receptive of what they say. Yeah, and that's why you, like, you can't find your own identity almost.
That's it. And you'll continue, like, well, not so much anymore now, but I continue to look for validation in others, you know, that,
yeah,
you know, I spoke about this previously in a different episode, but I wanted to do Bharatanatyam. So it's a traditional Indian dance. So,
yeah,
you know, you wear like really nice saris and makeup, and like every single woman on stage that's performing, it's like, I want to be her. I want to be that warrior, yeah, princess.
Yeah.
But because I was deemed a really dark, skinny girl, I was just discouraged to even follow that. So, mm-hmm, that almost like changed me as a person. You know, yeah, oh, I'm dark and skinny, so I can't do certain things because, yeah, I'm inadequate. I don't fit in. I'm not the preferred, you know, girl that people want to see on stage, you know, because, yeah, everyone wants the milky white skin. So, mm-hmm, it's crazy. And then all those times in school, just trying to fit in, trying to straighten your hair, you know, to almost look like the other white skin girls who, yeah, have boyfriends. Clearly they're successful, clearly they're doing something right. So that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna roll up my skirt, and I'm, yeah, gonna, you know, wear the most expensive shoes, and wear the, yeah, Nike backpack, and, like, you, yeah, know, hang out in groups, because that's what cool kids do.
Yeah.
Wow, it's crazy. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And
no, what such a stressful time as well. I think people forget, like, being a teenager is actually quite stressful, especially if you're a female. and a brown female as well.
But you've empowered me, because you know what, you made me realize that we must remember that we must never change ourselves for anyone, just so that we feel accepted. We are enough. We're perfect, even the way we are, with our traits and our little imperfections here and there. And you know what? If anyone makes you feel any less, then respectfully, it's time for them to be removed from your circle.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's still women in my life that are brown women, you know, black women, brown women. And I feel that they can't relate to what I'm doing or my carefreeness, and so I still get backlash from them sometimes. And sometimes it's more from women of color that are like, I don't understand how you're being like this, and why you're being like this, and why you've dyed your hair blonde, and why you've decided to go down this path of fashion. And it's like, it's exhausting, because it's like, I haven't got time to educate them on why I want to be like this. Just celebrate that everyone is different and will be how they want to be. So there's that as well. I don't want to make it sound like it was always white girls or white women that made me feel a way. It was,
oh yes, absolutely.
In the come up, it was people like, no, you shouldn't be like this, you know?
That's it.
That was so inspiring.
Yeah.
Like listening to it and realizing that you have gone through such similar experiences, in the sense that, I mean, even for me, it's that fitting in but not fitting in, and that understanding but not understanding, that being on the fence of, you know, I relate to you in the sense that like my dad is so strict, like I'm, you know, and that is just straight up it. My dad is as strict as it gets.
I'm still scared of her dad still to this day.
Going back to like having friends from school, Elisa, me and Dee, to give you background, me and Dee have been friends since year 7, and she's the only person I still talk to. And back then we were like two of the few like Tamils in our year that had that. So our parents were Western, but still held a lot of our like original cultural values, if you see what I mean. So, you know, my dad, and I'm quite like heavy chested, so my dad would not have me wear like anything that was less than here. He was not leaving the house, or if it was like slightly too tight, he was like, where do you think you're going, like what is going on? You know, skirts had to be like knee length, and this was school skirts, so what I would do is I would go to school and I'd roll it up, like straight up. I'd roll it up because it would look stupid. You look like a nun, like what is going on? And then obviously you don't want that to become, you know, another significant factor as to why you're like now standing aside from everybody else, when you're all you're trying to do is fit in. And it is so difficult. It is so, so difficult. I grew up like a really hairy Sri Lankan little kid. I had a unibrow, the whole lot, you wouldn't believe it. Like it was really difficult, to the point where I remember going to a theme park in Canada, and I had my arm, and I was about like 10, and I had my arm on the like railing, and I was really hairy, and I don't really give a crap anymore. I'm married, my husband doesn't care. So, I have really hairy arms, Elise, and I was holding my arm, and the couple behind me actually were like sniggering about it. You know, for a 10-year-old kid, that is really, really heartbreaking. And I remember putting my arm away, and I stood in front of my mum. My mum was like, what's wrong? And I went, nothing, don't worry about it, because I knew my mum would make a scene to protect her child, but that's not the culture that I wanted to, I didn't want us to be, oh my God, then seen as this problematic Asian family, because we're being loud and, you know, it's that constant battle we have to go through from the cultures that we are, from the upbringing that we have, and individually the PTSD that our parents have suffered getting over here, like the traumas that they have suffered implement the way in which they live their lives and raise us. And that's not something we can fix. It's not something we can educate them on. And being in a country where, you know, we have to say it, white people are privileged in the sense of medicine, in the sense of everything. And that leads me on to final part of this is, you mentioned a lot about self-care, and we talk a lot about self-care because coming from the backgrounds that we do and having experienced the experiences that we have gone through, self-care is so important for us, because if we don't take care of ourselves, nobody else is going to do it for us. Our brains tick differently. We've had different upbringings, different social circumstances where, you know, it's very difficult to make certain things acceptable in our culture, in our household. You know, we grew up living two different lives. And I think that's what makes it so much easier for us in a career, for us to put on this fake face and become the person that we want to be, but inside yeah. we're someone completely different. And it happens so often. I mean, it's horrible, but it does, you know, and this is the stigma that we're trying to break. And we're always trying to push the message of self-care. So from you to our audience, how do you implement self-care and how has self-care impacted you through your journey?
Yeah, so I guess for me, self-care is very much about time, like taking time out to do whatever it is you want. Like I always, you know, it was a big thing for me back in the day because I didn't really take that time, and when I did have time, I didn't really know what to do with it. And then fast forward a few years, I became, you know, started doing my Instagram content around skincare, and self-care always happened in front of a camera. Then it was like I would do my masking, I'd do a full skincare routine, and then afterwards I would take the time to write all the captions or you know, document everything properly, or send people, I still don't have swipe ups, but send people links to whatever I was talking about and stuff. So it then became a job. And then it wasn't as relaxing for me. And so I honestly love helping people, and there's nothing more rewarding than getting a message to say, oh my God, can you do more of your self-care routines? Because I love watching it, I'm learning from it. And that's really nice to know that I'm connecting with my audience in that way, but it's not allowing me to have time for myself. So basically what I do now is that we have a dog, and we got Chip in April, and he's a Doberman, so he needs like a lot of
milk.
Nice. So
big dog. Yeah,
very, very big. He's only 9 months and he's huge already. But that means I have to make that time in the day. So sometimes absolutely. I'll go for a walk with Deep, and or I'll go on my own and I listen to like one of your podcasts or another podcast, and just getting that fresh air is really nice, or lying in for a bit. I'm very good in the morning. So often, because I work full time, I will wake up at 4 or 5, do my Lumi content in the morning, then do my full time job, and then continue in the evening. So lying in is like a massive luxury for me. Or like I just love speaking with my parents, my godson. I'm very, very close to my brother. He is definitely one of, if not my best friend. So I really like speaking to him. And then doing a routine, like actually doing my mask routine without my camera on, and just taking the time to massage myself, think about, you know, what I want from that day. I wouldn't say, like, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you're the self-care queen. And I don't think I've nailed it yet. I'm still struggling. And I to find that balance between work and life and being a good wife and a dog mum and a sister. And now, you know, I have godchildren, like I said, and also that my dad's health is still, I mean, he got the all clear, and then he was diagnosed again with cancer last year. So his health is still up and down, and a lot of time is spent with him or going to hospitals. He's in hospital at the moment. So, you know, my spare time where I would take time out is now quickly run down to the hospital. So it's hard to find that balance, but I'm getting there. And, I always try to make sure that I am this person that people look up to or that they know that they can rely on, but I can't be that person if I don't take time out for myself. Absolutely. So something I've started doing is every Sunday night and Wednesday night, I always make sure I take time out for myself, whether that be on camera or off camera. Still struggling a bit with that, but I just try to be, I know that taking time out for myself will make me the best version for other people around me.
Absolutely. And I think I do absolutely agree with you. It's not, and self-care is not just, you know, like taking 10 minutes out of the day to sort of pamper yourself. Self-care is digesting the emotions you've gone through that day. And especially with someone in your circumstance, and I can really relate to you. I have a family member that requires significant hospital help, let's say. And your emotion and the way you feel is so important to sit down at the end of the day and just accept it, because what we do as I don't want to say Asian women, but what we do as women is we're almost hardwired to bottle it all up and pretend like we're the strongest people in the room. Mm-hmm. But that's where we go wrong, because sometimes we need to digest that and we need to accept it, because it gets to a point where we don't even know how we feel anymore. You know, do I feel sad about this situation? Do I feel angry? Should I feel happy? Should I feel, you know, it's a constant battle. And that is so draining. That is so, so draining. You know, you have to take 10 minutes for yourself, not to have a shower, not to sleep, not to just sit there and breathe.
Yeah.
And breathe, because I say it to the girls so often, and I've had many years of, like yourself, having to deal with various different circumstances that many other people can't relate with. You know, we come from a background and a culture where everything is so high strung that when something unpredictable gets thrown into it, it's that wire becomes even thinner, you know? And it's like, if someone just kind of went like that, everything is going to break, you know? And then we're like that as well. You know, we turn up to work on a Monday morning after going through everything that we've gone through, and we're like this, you know, we're so strung up. It's like, if something else happens, I can't deal with it. Do you know?
Even if something else did happen, I still feel like I'd have to cover it up, you know, because it's easier sometimes than to just deal with it. But you're so right. Taking just 10 minutes just to sit sometimes is the best. I actually like driving. I drive, and
that's
a form of self-care for me, because
it helps you think.
Yeah.
It helps you think. So I absolutely agree with you. My husband sits in the car, and I tell him off all the time for this, because he thinks the most when he's driving, and I hate it because I feel like he's not concentrating on the road. But that's when he wants a conversation about, you know, the mortgage and all the bills that are going out in the house. But that is self-care, you know, go for a drive. And if that helps you process those last 24 to 48 hours, then that is your self-care, because you're putting yourself in a much better position to be able to deal with the next day. If you see what I mean. And it's you need to be honest with your emotions, and you need to be honest with yourself, especially on a professional basis. You know, when you have so many different things going on, it's so important that you're honest with the people that you're working with. It's okay for you to feel the way you feel. It's okay for you to be open about what's going on. Those are forms of self-care, and those are forms of, you know, for you to feel so empowered that the audience have titled you self-care queen. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's those things. It's those things, absolutely. It's not just the face masks and the baths and the content. It's the fact that you process everything that you're going through. You have accepted who you are. And that is one of the highest forms of empowerment, is accepting who you are, accepting that you're a little bit obscure. I'm a little bit obscure, you know, a little bit obscure. And I'll say it to their face. we're all obscure, you know. I'm very much a homebody. If someone mentions going out for dinner, I will hide under the covers. Like, I don't like coming out. No, I don't like talking.
I just like it for getting dressed, and then I'm like, I'll come back again, and I'll be on the TV, like watching TV. I'm happy with that.
That's absolutely it. You know, your when you spoke about going to university, and you said you're not the sort of person to go out and party, you know, I can relate to you, because whilst I like to get dressed and go out, I was the person by midnight, I wanted to have my chicken nuggets and get straight back into it. You know what I mean?
I love going out for dancing. Like, some of my closest girlfriends, like we go out and we just like to dance.
Absolutely. And
I think that's what I've really missed during lockdown as well. Like, just that freedom of, there's something about singing and dancing for me that is self-care as well.
Yeah,
I really miss that, and that's why I like my car journey, because I sing in the car, I cry in the car, I listen to stuff in the car, and then dancing again, it just, like, it's the endorphins, isn't it? And
exercise.
But I'm totally there. I was like, okay, it's 1 a.m. now, let's go.
It's McDonald's is closing in a minute, mate. I need to go and get my 20p share box. After such an amazing conversation, Elise, I have one more question for you. And we like to finish on just a little empowerment message, really, from you to our audience. So moving forward, for people that are perhaps in a similar situation to yourself, or even coming up into a similar situation to yourself, What would you say to the audience as a piece of empowerment?
So I think empowerment to me is a couple of things. It is to have the confidence to be who you want to be around everyone. Everyone, because then you kind of lay it all out on the table, and if they like you, they like you. If not, then that's fine as well. But at least you can walk away from whatever situation that is and feel empowered, knowing that you were yourself. But in my work, in what I do with Lumi, I feel really empowered when I'm helping others. So I'm advising them on their skincare routine, because I'm hopefully then, you know, once they have their results, I'm instilling some confidence in them and giving them that knowledge to feel empowered to then pass that on to someone else. You know, I'm not very protective. I'm very much like, yeah, go and tell your friend this, or tell your friend to contact me or whatever. And it just makes me so happy. And like one of my good friends, Cass, she now sends me pictures on Wednesdays and Sundays, and she's like, I'm masking, who even am I? Like, I never used to do this. And then I'll get another picture from someone else saying my psoriasis is completely gone. Like, I feel so good. That makes me feel really good. I don't feel like, oh yes, my plan has worked, you know, my calculations have worked. I'm just like, that person's so happy, and I'm glad they're so happy. Because I think it comes back from my background, you know, I didn't have that growing up.
Yeah.
I didn't have a mum, but I didn't have anyone that could actually help me and instill this confidence in me that the way I feel like I'm maybe doing for others. So that's what empowerment means to me.
You have, can I just say, you have amazing skin. If you told me that you were suffering from acne and scarring previously, I wouldn't believe you. Like, if anybody's listening to this, she must be lying. Her skin is glowing through Zoom. I can see it.
Thanks. It's a lot of work, and I've stick to it. So I'm so glad it's looking like this.
Thank you so much for being on the show. We all kind of just sat there, and I'm sure the girls will mimic what I'm saying, is we nodded our heads throughout the entire time you were speaking to us, because everything you said, we have felt it at some point or the other, you know, not fitting in everything, just everything as a whole. You know, you're so relatable. It's unbelievable. That's it for today, guys. We will be welcoming more great guests over in 2021, so stay tuned in. Follow us on Spotify and leave a rating and comment on iTunes. In the meantime, follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter. Keep up on all things LBW, and don't forget to like, follow, and leave a comment on our posts. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank you all for your support so far. Since we began our podcast in September, we have been so fortunate to meet some wonderful people and hear from you, our amazing audience. We feel truly blessed and cannot wait to share the content we have been working on with you all next year. Wishing you all a peaceful, safe, and restful festive period. And until next time, take care, live big, and be kind to yourself.